There'll be spectacle, there'll be fantasy, there'll be daring do and stuff like you would never see.
Hey, an actor!
Yeah, we're gonna be a movie
starring everybody
and me. There'll be heroes bold, there'll be comedy, and a lot of fun that is for us to happily.
Hey, an actor!
We can watch it on develop
starring everybody!
And don't see Riley!
Ho, ho! Merry Christmas, everyone! It's the Christmas special 2025 of Hey An Actor, the film podcast with the brothers Wilson talking about actors. And, oh, can you hear the sleigh bells ring-a-ling-a-ding-ding? Because it's beginning to look a lot like Christmas. And, oh, hang on. What? January! Oh, fuck. Oh, sorry, everybody. Anyway, I'm Pandy, and I'm joined, as always, by my wonderful brother Ian. How are you, bro?
Hello, brother. You saved me from making perhaps a distasteful joke about Venezuela. So that's probably for the best. I'm Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you.
In so far that it is January.
Yeah.
My Christmas period was quite extended,
mm-hmm.
Being with the family for as long as I was.
You were down here for ages.
I know. I was wearing out my welcome very rapidly.
I wouldn't say that, but...
Well, it was just implied. But and it's our sister's fault as well.
Fair enough.
But yeah, it was nice. It was restful. I didn't have to cook for 2 weeks.
You enjoyed three Christmas dinners cooked by me.
I did. Yes, I was invited to all of them.
Yeah, you were. Yeah.
And one of them, was only cooked by you on account of the village that you live in bursting a pipe.
Yes, not my fault.
No, not your fault. But I found it funny. I told you this at the time because that was for New Year.
Uh-huh.
And around that time I was temporarily sick. Because usually when I go down, I stay with the parents, Wilson, rather than the boy. Because, you know, if anyone does stay with you, it does mean shifting Evie from sleeping in her room to sharing the room with Link.
Yeah.
Whereas, I was staying with Mum and Dad for the majority of the time, and I had to be shifted from Fort Wilson for a couple of days to accommodate late sister. After enjoying a Christmas in Japan.
Yeah.
Swanning about in Japan, just like you do.
Swanning.
As you do in exactly. Japan, the home of swans. And... So basically I was being turfed out so that she and her husband could sleep there that night. So I'm like, oh, this is a bit of an upheaval, but I'll be gracious about it. And then a pipe burst affecting Fort Wilson, but crucially, not Fort Pandy.
Hey, hey.
So my big teeth-gritted begrudgingness turned into outright malevolent glee.
Hooray! All's well that ends well.
The true spirit of Christmas.
Thank you, Angela Water.
Yes, indeed. But how about you? Because obviously I was there, but from your perspective, did you enjoy your Christmas time off?
It was hard work. It seemed to never end.
Yeah.
And obviously lovely to see lots of people, but three Christmas dinners and hosting a fuck ton of people. Oh man, I was kind
not
of
not that afraid. Heavy.
No, not you taking it personally. It was lovely, and the kids are still the right age to believe in Father Christmas.
Yeah,
and you know, long may that continue. Well, not long may that continue because he was going to secondary school soon. So you know, it was fine. It was fine. It was usual Christmas lovely. And I'm glad that it's over. In the nicest possible way.
more time for important things like podcasting.
Indeed, and here we are, ready to talk about our... So, we usually, we know that we're a bit behind, and so we've kind of done January and Christmas rolled into one, and have a January, quote-unquote, pick for the next episode, just to kind of keep things in order. So we've gone for a funny comedic actor who also has some serious chops as well, and we've seen him a few times before, but this week we're talking about, this month we're talking about, the acclaimed Boogie and Talladega Nights actor, John C. Reilly.
We are, because he won the Tomlinson Award from 2024 for person we'd like to see in 2025. And as this is technically a 2025 episode, it counts.
I mean, we don't watched...
We don't want to diminish the importance of the Tomlinsons.
No, we watched one of the films together. Was it just within December, or was it just...
It was definitely in December.
There we go, right at the end of December. So, ho, 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 Merry Christmas.
Quite so.
Indeed. And those films that we're talking today, it's Christmas, so therefore we're just talking about the two, and then we can look back on the Year of Ha, even though it's not an extensive one. No. We are looking at, first of all, we'll start in a minute by looking at Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story, and after that, his big old comedy turn with that there Will Ferrell in Step Brothers. And then along the way, we might have some extra little tidbits, including, but not limited to, the Tomlinson Awards.
Don Tevesen.
Yeah.
And then also, we have the Christian... Christmas,
oh, the Christmas Challenge. Yes, of course.
And hey, do you want to have a guess when Christian sent this?
About Halloween?
Not too far off. November the 10th.
Okay.
So, not too bad. Should we do that now before we get into the film?
Now, that's a very good idea. Let's have a talk about that.
Because we can have some thinking time.
Indeed, doodles.
So, Christian says, "Ahoy, Ian, the man in market, and Pandy, the ceremony observer."
What?
Someone's been... listening back to some classic Who reviews. There was an episode called a story called Snake Dance, which I believe was Fifth Doctor, which had Martin Clunes in it.
Then
also had just really generic supporting characters in the cast, such as Ceremony Observer and Man in Market.
So, Man in Market.
There we go.
So, fine. Okay.
After podcasting you're from about 12 years ago. Christian says, "As you're well aware, 2026 will mark both the 13th Shudder Year of Hay and Actor.
Good God.
And the 250th birthday of the United States of America."
Oh, never mind.
Gasp. "To mark both seemingly unlucky and unhappy occasions." Certainly from a British point of view.
Indeed.
"Perhaps you could devote the year to either A, no American actors," can scratch that one, "B, only American actors, but only disgraced or cancelled ones, such as Johnny Depp, Shia LaBeouf, Kevin Spacey, etc."
Okay.
I wasn't aware that Shia LaBeouf was disgraced or cancelled.
He's kind of in a sort of James Franco vibe.
I thought he was just an arsehole, but that's slightly different. But anyway. Or C, only American actors, but only those who are either not white, not male, not straight, or two of the three above.
Oh, man.
Thanks for the suggestions, Christian.
We'll file them in our special bin. I mean, special place. No, that's not fair. I mean, if we could have the luxury of planning these things out in advance, we might consider it more. Maybe not this year, maybe a future year.
Yeah, I don't think, given that last year was not a themed year, and the year before was a themed year, and our first non-themed year, we only did four episodes proper. I think we'll have another non-themed year for 2026, and perhaps revisit the idea in 2027.
Yeah. But
there we go.
To celebrate 251 years of America.
Yeah, exactly. And when you say 13 years of Hey and Act, technically yes, but the first episode was December 2023. So really the 13th year proper is 2027.
Fine. So there we go. So we could still do it sort of within that time frame.
Yeah, I mean, because that is more 13th proper.
Indeedles.
Indeed. So Christian goes on to say, anywho, on to the Christmas casting challenge.
Hooray.
Without knowing what the future holds, what living or deceased actor would each of you cast to play yourself in a biopic?
Ooh.
Further casting, such as for T'Other Brother, Your Parents, Your Sister, Adam, Stavros, etc., is optional.
Okay. Yeah,
I really want Stavros in my biopic. Although there's a very easy choice for him. Tim Key.
I thought it had to be horror actors.
It doesn't say that. But
I mean, that's usually...
That would make sense for the casting challenge.
Yeah. Anyway,
also, what biopic conventions would you like your biopic... would your biopic follow, defy, or subvert? Would it be, for instance, be a rise to fall to rise story with musical numbers along the lines of Ray or Walk the Line? Would it zero in on a particular episode of your life, a la Frost Nixon or Steven Spielberg's Lincoln, or be a knowingly inaccurate parody like Weird, the Al Yankovic story? Which has Daniel Radcliffe as Weird Al Yankovic.
Indeed. It's meant to be very good.
Yeah. Indeed. Finally, what living or deceased director would you tap to helm your biopic? Christopher Nolan or Ridley Scott? Stephen Frears or Oliver Stone? Dexter Fletcher or Hayao Miyazaki? Your dedicated streaming audience member... Steaming audience member. That was another statement. Christian. P.S. Personally, I nominate Jim Broadbent as Old Man Pandy, Donald Gleeson as present-day-ish Ian, and Andrew Garfield as Michael David Sims.
Yeah.
Now, that is going beyond the casting challenge kind of... Barrett. I mean, I take the central conceit, but that the idea of Christopher Nolan, who we haven't covered, Stephen Frears, who I haven't covered, Oliver Stone, who we haven't covered. Really, it's just Ridley Scott and Miyazaki as directors we have done. So perhaps if I mould Christian's suggestion a little, a biopic that has to include the actors that we've had this year and what role in our lives, what characters in our biopic they would play.
Okay.
So if I give you the actors, just for ease of reference.
Indeed.
So someone who we've come across in life who is closest to Gene Wilder, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Jamie Foxx, and Robert De Niro.
Okay.
Perhaps they don't have to be central figures, but...
so they've got a feature, and then everybody else is a bit of a wild card.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay.
But we've also got to choose a... I suppose for directors, we can relax it a little bit, because as I say, we've only had a few. Although we could also include actors who have been directors, such as Orson Welles.
Yeah.
Rob Reiner. Of course.
Rest in peace.
Tom Hooper.
Hooper?
Peter Jackson.
Right.
Davis Guggenheim on the documentary kind of side of things.
As in Holy Shit It's.
Indeed. Richard Curtis.
Curtains.
Of course. And of course, something that very much fits the aesthetic of the Brothers Wilson. Tim Burton.
Hooray! The falling skeleton.
Some food for thought there.
Yeah.
So basically, as long as we work in the four actors that we covered for 2025, and then just play about with the biopic a bit more on that front.
Mm. Okay, I will have a think about that one. And then we'll hear the results later in the show.
We shall indeed. But let's crack on and get to our first John C. Reilly film. And, brother, what is that going to be?
Well, unfortunately, on this ramble I need to do, I've just taken a Viagra. That's right. It's time to walk hard. I feel dirty. The Dewey Cox story. Cox. Oh, shit.
Mr. Cox. Mr. Cox.
Give him a minute, son. Dewey Cox needs to think about his entire life before he plays.
From the time he was a boy.
Ain't no six-year-old understand the true meaning of the blues.
I reckon I might.
I done a bad thing. Cut my brother in half.
It's not bad for your first time.
The music of Dewey Cox
Take my hand
has had an effect on people.
It's the devil's music.
From the guy who brought you Talladega Nights and Superbad.
You have got to give up this dream. You're never going to make it.
And maybe you don't believe in me after all.
I do believe in you. I just know you're going to fail.
Columbia Pictures presents The Epic Journey.
Walking to the top of a mountain ain't easy. It's a long, hard walk. But I will walk hard.
Of the man who became a legend.
Walk hard.
The Beatles won't hang out, so I'm going to go do that.
With meditation, there's no limit to what we can imagine.
This Christmas.
I'm leaving you.
You can take the children. But you leave me my monkey.
When it comes to music...
I ain't good enough to follow Elvis.
There's two things you need to know. I'm the king. And number two is...
Look out, man!
See how close I came to your head? I can chop a man in half.
I'm guilty as John.
No legend is bigger than Cox.
You met my new wife, Cheryl Cox Teague.
Thanks, Buddy Holly.
What do you think, George Harrison?
The one, the only, Dewey Cox.
And thank you, Eddie Vedder.
Walk hard.
What happened to you, Dewey?
I don't know, but I know what happened to you.
Patrick Duffy took a beating.
Walk hard.
My life has been blessed, from my singing to my family to my sausage.
It doesn't say Cox unless I say it tastes like Cox.
Walk hard.
Walk Hard, The Dewey Cox Story, is a 2007 comedy mockumentary musical film of a fictional USA musician called Dewey Cox, who is an amalgam of all sorts of American musicians. And the story itself is a hashing together of various tropes of the American musician from the, say, 1950s through to probably the 80s, maybe even 90s a bit at the end, about what it's like to be a rock and roll star and the rises and falls, and more importantly, the story of the ups and downs and how they've been told over the years. And it stars John C. Reilly as the titular Dewey Cox, who has a rise to fame very similar to, say, Johnny Cash, and Roy Orbison, and then has a similar decline in many ways, but also factors in people like Tina Turner, Neil Diamond, and various other people.
Dylan.
And along the way, yes, indeed. And along the way, there are various cameos from real and acted people playing different roles from the past, say Jack White as Elvis and various people from 80s TV as themselves.
Yes.
And it's a film that I had not seen before, and I know that you hadn't seen it before either, brother, and we watched it together over the Christmas period.
Project Tar for the win.
Indeed, indeed. How much did you know about this film before we sat down and watched it?
I knew of the concept of the film. I knew it was John C. Reilly playing a musician, and it was a kind of parody. Exactly what he was, or who he was parodying, I wasn't entirely sure. If you look at the poster on the Wikipedia page, it's a mock-up of a pose that Jim Morrison of the Doors did. So I was like, is it going to be like the Doors. It's like, oh no, it's about a much wider array of musicians that are being parodied. And I will say, I'm very glad that this podcast has covered both Walk the Line for Reese Witherspoon month in year one, and then more recently, this past year, Ray, because I think those are the two films that this film draws the most influence from.
I think that's fair to say. I think there's also a bit of What's Love Got to Do with It in there,
yes,
as well.
Yes, absolutely.
To a lesser extent, maybe even a bit of Dreamgirls.
Maybe. I think Dreamgirls was out around the time this was being made. So, maybe.
But it was a stage show of its
own.
Oh,
that's true. That's true. I was thinking more the film. But, I was aware of it, and it was one of those films I just thought, I'll get round to that at some point. And and here we are. So got round to it by virtue of the podcast. And so there was nothing necessarily putting me off from it, apart from the fact it's not a film that I heard raved about as a film you've got to go out of your way to see. At most, I heard that John C. Reilly was good in it.
Right.
But other than that, I didn't know who the supporting cast were. So there's one or two previous half-featured actors. So Kristen Wiggs in there, right at the start, as the kind of first wife figure, who's just having children all the time and is unsupportive.
Yep.
So that's very much how Walk the Line depicted Johnny Cash's first wife. And then we also had, someone else. Why am I blanking? Jack Black was one of the Beatles, who he meets.
I'm the leader of the Beatles.
Yeah, he's Paul McCartney. That was my kind of, formal introduction to this. What about you, brother? You hadn't seen it before, so was it on your radar at all?
Not really, no. And it's something that I would have seen, like, the odd clip from, like the aforementioned Jack White having a cameo as Elvis. That was kind of made the rounds at some point. Jack White fan base. Yeah, indeed. And the kind of being in India, I'm the leader of the Beatles, kind of Beatles parody,
yeah,
made the rounds at some point. Otherwise, I knew it was a thing, and then just, I guess, in a similar vein, thought, oh, I'll probably watch it at some point. And I'm really surprised that I didn't watch it sooner, because it came out in 2007, and I was first year of university then.
Yeah.
And I don't know what you remember about 2007, brother, but especially within, certainly my university, people were quoting Anchorman, like, everywhere. Like, every single time there was an opportunity for someone to do an Anchorman reference, it was there, and it kind of got done to death in many ways. And I'm not really surprised that this film wasn't in a similar vein to that, in terms of, like, the quotability, the kind of random Judd Apatow-like humour, especially having John C. Reilly, who has a connection to Will Ferrell,
yeah,
and a lot of the kind of comedy actors who are in this film. I guess the degree of separation is that it's based very much on a certain type of musician and a certain type of biopic, which maybe the students didn't all flock to. But, you know, people liked The Doors. People liked Elvis, some of them. So I was kind of surprised that it wasn't as big of a thing.
Yeah.
But that being said, yeah, I knew it was a thing. I'm just surprised it wasn't more of a thing. And maybe that's reflected in its kind of box office taking, which usually we come to at the end of the review. But it did make a bit of a loss. It did kind of get buried for whatever reason. But I think it's a really good film.
It has a high volume of laughs in it.
Indeed, and we sat there enjoying it all the way through, it's fair to say. I think there are definitely kind of some down moments, or like it kind of goes through a cycle again and again and again. And some of the humour in the middle maybe suffers for that. But generally, it's kind of referring to so many different things, and it's just absurdist in its own way, and it's got really subtle little nods to little tweaks that you kind of be rewarded for if you do know a lot of the history of the Beatles or a lot of the history of who do you said earlier, Bob Dylan. And yeah, there's lots of little things. And before we watched it together, I was going to watch it. And you know this story. I sat down, watched the first 3 minutes and paused it saying, this is something we need to watch together.
Yeah.
Because having watched Ray within the last year,
yes.
Oh, God, it leans so hard on the whole idea of, even one of the first lines of the film is, he won't perform until he's gone through every single stage of his life. The idea of someone standing backstage just reminiscing like yeah. Johnny Cash before he plays at Folsom or you know, there's just so much kind of reference to a lot of ground that we've covered. Mm. And I think we had a blast.
We did. I mean, sometimes it really enhances the experience when we're watching it together, so...
Oh, especially a comedy film as well.
Oh, well, I was going to say, I mean, so this, Blazing Saddles, The Cider House Rules, you know, all all those thigh slappers.
And maybe one of the films that we're going to be watching... Oh, hang on, I just got the Cider House Rules reference. I was going to say, yeah, we watched another film for an upcoming episode together.
We did.
And again, I think if I'd watched it by myself, it would have maybe suffered. But anyway, more on that next
Indeed.
Month.
Indeed.
But yeah, what did you think of it overall?
I can see what you're saying in so far as I can see that there's a clear, there should be, or it was going for a broad appeal at like college students, like university students, like people who like this kind of humour, but are probably looking for the quotable stuff. I think because it very much trends into the parody aspect rather than going for straight comedy. There's a lot of comedy in there, don't get me wrong, but because it also yeah. wants to make it clear that it is parodying Ray and Walk the Line. One of the funniest running gags for me was a reference to Walk the Line, where basically whenever there's a particularly depressive point of the film for Jimmy Cox, he'll be near a wash basin and he'll just pull it out of the wall and water will fly everywhere. Because that happens twice in Walk the Line, which, again, I might have said at the time, it seemed a bit excessive that he had two exactly the same kind of breakdowns involving ripping sinks out the wall and then going to rehab. And so to that point... This happens on more than two occasions in this film. And
multiple, even like one of the kind of the last scenes of the whole film is him going into a bathroom and pulling every single sink off the wall. Yeah.
So I think perhaps if it had really leaned into the quotable lines, then it might have rivaled Anchorman. To that extent, because
right.
I 2007, I was just finishing up at my university,
right.
So I was still kind of on the periphery of university stuff, as my girlfriend at the time was still at university. So Anchorman was obviously huge around then because that came out in 2004 when I started university, and because it had come out whilst I was in Canada. I hadn't seen it in the cinema, so I didn't immediately fall in love with it, like a lot of people my age did.
Okay.
Same with Shaun of the Dead. You know,
really?
Well, by which I mean Shaun of the Dead came out whilst I was in Canada, so I didn't see it until like a couple of years later. And by then, I think I'd seen Hot Fuzz. I like... Well, this is all okay. Very well, but I much prefer Hot Fuzz. And also, because I'm not big into zombie films, then it had that going against it as well. But that, be that as it may, it's slightly surprising that the film didn't do better. So I don't think you gave the numbers. It was made for $35 million and only made $20.6 million. And, in a way, I wonder where all that money went, because it's not a particularly starry cast. And whereas there's a lot of people...
I mean, it's a wide cast.
I mean, it's kind of like Ray, in a way, in so far as there's a lot of people in the cast, but they're only there for, as you say, each individual segment of his life. So as I say, you have Kristen Wiig kind of at the very beginning, and there's a great visual joke where after you see Dewey for the first time in a very tasteless bit with his brother, it then flashes forward to 14-year-old Dewey Cox, who is John C. Reilly, playing with, like, teenagers. And Kristen Wiig's there. Apparently, she's meant to be 12 at the time as well, when you first see her. But again, I mean, in terms of names, you've got Jenna Fischer from The Office as a second wife. You've got people from SNL like Tim Meadows and Chris Parnell. But again, not the huge name. That might be a bit unfair on Tim Meadows, but Chris Parnell isn't really known over here in the UK.
Not massively.
You've got Craig Robinson for a little bit at the beginning. You've got Harold Ramis intermittently. So this would be a few years before he passed. Ed Helms is in a scene. Jane Lynch has a scene. I mean, and then you've got like cameos as so you've got Frankie Muniz playing Buddy Holly, obviously,
which works really
well. It works surprisingly well. Jack White, as you say, is Elvis Presley, which you would obviously loved. We've mentioned this already. You've got the Beatles scene, and whilst I think they were uncredited, but you had Jack Black as Paul. Paul Rudd as John Lennon, Justin Long as George Harrison, and Jason Schwartzman as Ringo Starr. And then you had a lot of other people playing themselves. But I don't know, I want to thought perhaps it's just a bigger indictment of people not going to see it for whatever reason.
I mean, in order to really fully appreciate it, I think you need to have watched at least Ray and Walk the Line.
And I suppose those are slightly different audiences.
They're different audiences, and they're very American. So you've kind of lost the international thing, potentially. If you know everything, if you're into the arts in total, you know your music, you know your history, if you're kind of I guess an SNL fan or a bit of a comedy nerd / music nerd. A lot of links between comedy and music and musicians and vice versa. I think it's perfect for you, but it's not got huge mass appeal. That being said, if you were to watch it, having not seen them, I think it's still a funny film in its own right. If you kind of like that weirdness that... like a Judd Apatow film of that time would bring, it's very much all there. It's got the same spirit as Anchorman. It's just it rewards you for seeing other things as well.
Sure.
And like just really, really subtle little bits, like you referenced about Kristen Wiig being his first wife and just ending up with another child. And every time he's on the phone, there's another child. Or when he's leaving their family home, he keeps bringing children outside. And that's a really subtle nod to in these biopics like Ray and whatever. We know that he started a family, but the only kind of reference to them is a shot with the wife with now a slightly older child and then another one in a crib in the background or something like that. Yeah. And it knows, and I guess it's paying homage to these films at the same time as lampooning them.
Yeah.
And it's all done with love. It's not kind of, wow, I'm a pretentious asshole kind of thing.
Oh yeah, I mean, it never takes itself seriously, certainly. I mean,
no.
If you think about, and so this is now more a kind of Ray, or maybe even What's Love Got to Do With It thing, when... Dewey gets his big break by filling in for a singer at a club that primarily plays African American music.
Yeah.
Even before he jumps into this role, the dancing is so incredibly suggestive. There's a lot of faces in crotches, let's just put it that way.
It's so fun. And again, it makes nothing of it. It's just like, if you've seen that kind of film, watch those dances, then it's like, oh yeah. They do go to town.
That is how black people dance, yes.
But no, that's not what I'm saying. It's like, there's kind of, and it sort of references the previous scene where they have this talent show and his band plays this really kind of rockabilly sensible song. And people in the audience just lose all their morals en masse. Yeah. And like, it seems like the devil's music, how dare you? And like,
It's a song that's about, just like, called Take My Hand.
Yeah, but like, it speaks to the outrage this kind of music brought about, and that second scene is more about the, well, this is the kind of music that was in the clubs and everybody did this, and it's clearly not right, but it's what the film kind of would say.
One of the things that I thought was really consistent and funny within the film is that quite a lot of the times is Dewey like introduces the song to silence, seemingly with a lot of pressure and perceived antipathy that he has to win over. And then within like the first few bars or few lines of him singing, everyone is reacting.
Yay!
Like, as soon as he starts doing Walk Hard, having to follow Elvis, it's like, everyone loves it. And Christian Wiig's repeated refrain, you're not going to make it, you know.
Oh, the repeated jokes, is it like his dad? The wrong son died!
Yeah, I mean, that was repeated to the point of parody. And it was going for that, obviously. But, and again, that's the Robert Patrick character in Walk the Line. So, without the machete battle.
And the kind of force ghosts. Oh, God! Oh, maybe I'll come back to it later on.
No, go on, go for it now.
I've just said force ghosts, and at the end, like the reunion concert, and everyone's going mental, and his kind of aged manager is there, kind of, and he dies during the performance, and therefore joins the lineup of ghosts from his past watching the show.
And he's like confused.
He just died in the audience, and he's
there. Fully confused as to what's going on.
It's full of such great little bits.
Manager, by the way, David Krumholtz.
Who was in 10 Things I Hate About You.
Oh, we've...
And Oppenheimer.
We've mentioned him recently.
Have we?
Because you're like, he's also in Oppenheimer, remember?
Yeah.
It's like, yes.
It's just amazing to me, the guy who had a dick drawn on his face is now in a Christopher Nolan film.
Well, there we go. Yes.
Anyway. Where do we go? Oh, I'd like to mention the music in this film.
Yeah, sure.
And the soundtrack.
Oh, sorry. I'll tell you why we brought him up. He was actually in Ray.
Was he?
Yeah, he was.
Oh, was he Armour Erdogan? No, he wasn't Armour Erdogan. He was the rival guy, wasn't he? Music. It wasn't Atlantic Records, it's who we bought into.
We'll get back to it, it's fine.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the music.
The soundtrack in this film is great. And for a film that is kind of living and dying or exists solely based on musical biopics and kind of paying homage to musicians from the past, that there are some amazing bits of incidental music or thematic bits or even kind of fake Dewey Cox songs playing all the way through. Like, the Walk Hard song is legitimately an awesome song.
Yeah.
Walk hard. Yeah. There's all sorts of cool little bits.
Then you've got other people singing that towards the end, such as Jewel and Eddie Vedder.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. So it's made with a lot of love and reverence. And then I'm having a quick look at the soundtrack now. Dan Byrne and Mike Viola of the Candy Butchers. No, me neither.
No.
But I know that John C. Reilly, in fact, it says down here, John C. Reilly sang on all the tracks and played guitar on most of them. So this is, I mean, we're talking about John C. Reilly this month, and he's not just the lead character. He's kind of stamped all over this film. I mean, it's a biopic about somebody he's playing, but then he's also like melting into the very fibre of everything that's in there. And it really works to his kind of weird delivery and sort of naivety that he brings to a lot of his roles, John C. Reilly.
Yeah.
So it's kind of the best version of him, as it were. He's kind of giving emotional, he's also giving bizarre comedy and musical stuff as well.
I mean, this is, and one of the reasons we picked this film specifically, is this is like the best example of a John C. Reilly film. Apart from the fact that he didn't have a hand in actually writing the film or, or coming up with the idea. So it's like
right.
a film that he perhaps doesn't spearhead, but he buys into with his full being. And it's unfortunate that the film didn't do well, but, you know, he's bounced back from it. It's not a problem. But it does take an amount of talent to do is it a lot of various different types of comedy? Because musical comedy is different from the slapstick of, as I say, machete fights. And then comedic timing and, you know, just being there in the foreground holding like a phone up to you when a man walks into shop with his penis out. And, you know.
Well, in the similar vein of, like, there's gratuitous boobs in all these biopics.
Yes.
And then just a dude's cock hanging.
As it should be.
As it should be. It's the Game of Thrones kind of positive action cock.
Sure. I don't know what that means, but...
Never mind.
As in, you see as many dongs as you do boobs.
Pretty much. Well, it's trying to redress some sort of balance.
It's more proportional.
I mean, I don't know. Okay. It was pretty big.
Right. Well, there we go. do you have a particular favourite song, or failing that, do you have a particular favourite scene?
Favourite scene? It's difficult to pick one, I think. It's such a kind of bitty film that there's lots of... It's like almost every scene has a kind of counterpart in another biopic or in another person's story. I did like the... I forget exactly. I think it's meant to homage Brian Wilson's smile, the kind of being lost and obsessive over something.
Yeah.
That whole thing about, like, telling people to do stuff in a weird, eccentric way based on his narcotics use and getting increasingly bizarre. And that's kind of a fun set piece. Obviously, the Jack White bit's got to be in there just because. Difficult to really find a standout bit for me, but I'd say that would be something that springs to mind. What about you?
I don't know if it made me laugh the most, but before he got into the Brian Wilson style weirdness, he also went through the Bob Dylan style weirdness, and you've got his two perpetual bandmates saying, what the hell is this song about? I've got no idea. Trampoline! And then he does a protest song in support of dwarves.
Yeah.
Let me hold you, little man. I'm just like, this is definitely the film for that kind of thing.
But, you know, do you remember the outrage they had when, what's he called? The songwriter who did stuff for Toy Story.
Randy
Newman got in trouble for writing a song about short people.
No, I didn't.
And did you not know that?
No, I know the song. I've heard the song before. But...
Oh, he got in hot water because of it.
Oh, wow.
And but out of context, this song must be even worse than that.
Well, maybe it was within mind, with the short people controversy in mind.
Maybe, I don't know.
I'll also give a shout out to the whole, he's doing his old TV comeback in the 70s. Because had a lot of Boogie Nights kind of vibes, which of course he was
Indies.
In.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and there, he's doing like covers as well. So he's doing Starman. In is that the one when he's on roller skates, or is that a different one?
I don't remember, but they're all in the same kind of montage-y bit. Yeah. I think in this film, it's probably not worth talking about favourite bits, more favourite recurring jokes that appear.
Go on.
Like the kind of, when he gets introduced to various different drugs. It's like, what are you all doing in here? It's weed. You don't want to get into this. What's it like? Well, it's not addictive and makes things really, really funny, but you don't want to be in on it. Like every single time he, like, busting on them doing drugs. Yeah. It's like, here are all the benefits, and you don't want to do it. Which is fun. And there are, like, little kind of silly things like, bloody hell. Like, I don't want to succumb to temptations. And he goes outside the room and there are the actual Temptations singing My Girl.
Yeah.
And the fact that they deliberately lean into some of the cameos being god awful, like the John Lennon accents and all the Beatles accents are, I'm pretty sure, on purpose terrible.
Yes,
just to kind of play into the observed. I'm from Liverpool. I'm John Lennon.
You're not going to confuse Jack Black for Paul McCartney, put it that way.
Not really. Paul Rudd does look a little bit like John Lennon, but only because he's got the glasses and the facial hair,
and he's doing a half good impression, but the impression is the parody of John Lennon. So, and then, you know, Jason Schwartzman just flat out doesn't look like Ringo Starr.
Nope. Not in the slightest.
Justin Long's basically just wearing a wig, but good stuff. Okay, so you'd recommend Walk Hard?
I would. If you've watched lots of Hay and Actor films, yes, thank you. If you, listener, have watched lots of Hay and Actor films, you'd get a big kick out of Walk Hard. It's fun on a bun.
It sure is. I agree. We had a good time watching it. I wonder how it would hold up to repeat viewings. And that is something that I've got for the rest of my life to figure out. So there we go.
I mean, I think that it's dense enough. There's probably things that we didn't pick up on first time rounds.
Sure.
But hey, who knows?
Who knows? Good stuff. Okay. Well, that was Walk Hard. And I don't know, rather than get straight into the next review, we'll drop in a clip from Walk Hard. And then we can do something else.
What a good idea.
Get out of here, Dewey.
What are y'all doing in here?
We're smoking reefer. And you don't want no part of this shit.
You're smoking reefers?
Yeah, of course we are. Can't you smell it?
No, Sam. I can't.
Come on, Dewey. Join the party.
No, Dewey. You don't want this. Get out of here.
You know what? I don't want no hangover. I can't get no hangover.
It doesn't give you a hangover.
Well, I get addicted to it or something?
It's not habit forming.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know. I don't want to overdose on it.
You can't OD on it.
It's not going to make me want to have sex, is it?
It makes sex even better.
It sounds kind of expensive.
It's the cheapest drug there is.
Hmm.
You don't want it.
I think I kind of want it.
Okay, but just this once. Come on in.
Well then, what with this festive special?
Well,
quite Santa. We are now getting to everyone's favourite time of the year. And that is no other than the Tomlinson Awards.
Favourite featured actor.
Favourite review.
Worst film cover.
Best feedback.
Favourite jingle.
The most anticipated subject for 2023.
Hey, an actor award!
I look forward to that jingle every year. a new one all every
the,
year.
All the work you put into it. 10 years ago.
I am a lazy man.
Well, then.
But yes, welcome to the Tomlinsons. Hope you're wearing your suits and your dinner jackets and your dresses. I'm talking about you, Christian.
Yeah.
And here we go for some award-winning fun.
Yes, don't make any of your speeches political now.
No.
Indeed. Right then, we kick off, as ever, with the favoured featured actor. Winners of the past are Arnold Schwarzenegger, Sir Christopher Lee, Tom Hanks, Dame Angela Lansbury, Sir Ian McKellen, Timothy Dalton, Christopher Plummer, Natalie Portman, Orson Welles, and, of course, rounding out that distinguished lineage, Nicolas Cage. So, we don't have too many to choose from this year, obviously.
Sorry, that was only last year.
That was Gene Wilder, Catherine Zeta-Jones, Jamie Foxx, Robert De Niro. So, thus far, we do have a clear leader. I should say we've had 5 ballots. Which,
well done, thank you.
I'll say we've had less for years where we've been more productive. So, yes. So,
well, thank you all very much.
Thank you very much. So, of the 5, 3 votes currently are in for Robert De Niro.
Uh-huh.
And then there's 1 vote each for Gene Wilder and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Oh, fun.
So, brother, who would you want to nominate?
So, obviously, it's a very subjective thing. And I don't know, I'm going to go with my head on this one. I think it's probably got to be Robert De Niro.
Okie dokie. I mean, I will say, just because favourite slash best, I mean, if it were definitely going best, it would be De Niro. I'm going to throw a second vote to Gene Wilder. Because
I would have done.
I don't think, I'm sure he's done bad films, but we just haven't covered them yet. So, the winner of the 2025 Walls Favourite Featured Actor Award, it's Robert De Niro.
Hey. I mean, it makes sense, because like, the Oscars looks back on the previous year. So
yes,
it's our version.
That is true. Let's try and get this out before the Oscars, shall we?
What a good idea.
Anyway, we move on to the Tomlinson Award for Favourite Review.
Oh, now.
So.
12 films.
12 films,
no,
yeah.
11 films. Oh, no, we're not including Guy. So, yeah, we're fine.
Great. We've got 12 films. This one's a bit more split. Now, obviously, there are 5 people, but the split is 3-2. I know for a fact that the film currently on 3 votes is not getting Pandy's vote. Because we've currently got 3 votes for Goodfellas. And we've got 1 vote for Willy Wonka and the, 2 votes for Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. Now, do you want to get, now, remember, it's favourite review rather than favourite film, because as I say,
Law abiding. Go on.
What one last time was Chinatown / Bright. So there's a real range. I mean, previous awards have gone to The Sublime, like Hot Fuzz. We've got more of the ridiculous, really. We've got Pearl Harbor. We've got Street Fighter. We've got The Hobbit for Desolation of Smaug. And, of course, Braveheart.
Favourites and best. You
exactly,
know,
it's not
indicative of the quality of the film. It's how well we did in lampooning it or singing its praises,
indeed,
you know.
Indeed. So, do you want me to run through? Because, I mean, there's 12 of them, so it won't take long.
Sure.
If you just want. Whether or not you can remember the actual reviews is a different matter, but...
Unlikely, but let's go for
it. We've had Stir Crazy, Young Frankenstein, and Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory.
Uh-huh.
We've had The Haunting, The Mask of Zorro, and Chicago. We have had Law Abiding Citizen, Ray, and Django Unchained. And we've had The King of Comedy, Taxi Driver, and indeed Goodfellas.
Mmm. Law-abiding citizen.
Law-abiding citizen.
Because, you know, I just enjoyed our conversation about the morality of it. It's a film I enjoy. Even if recent events have thrown up some problems about Jamie Foxx, but never mind. What about you, brother?
Well, I mean, there's an argument, and I'll probably go with it, not only because I think very highly of it as a film, but the fact that you absolutely hate it, which in and of itself threw out some very interesting talking points, means I'm going to add my voice to the choir of Goodfellas, therefore the Tomlinson goes to Goodfellas.
Well, I'm very disappointed. Although hopefully it's because people agree that it was worth talking about how bad it was.
Well, you can take that up with Reverend Org, Christian, and Donovan.
Okay.
So go troll them in your own time.
Hey, priest! Now, no, I know you're a TV star now.
Now,
anyway,
this is going to be interesting. Because we do now have the worst movie covered.
Goodfellas.
Now, Mike declined to submit a film for this one. So we currently have 4 votes.
Okay.
And there's an even split.
Oh, between Goodfellas and...
Well, one of these films is The Haunting.
Oh, that's pretty bad.
And the other, and this is going to surprise you, I think, unless they they completely misread it, or they both actually have a mutual loathing of the film. I don't think they sent in feedback. Both Peter and Anne-Marie Organ have nominated Young Frankenstein.
Oh, wow.
The worst movie covered. Bear in mind, previous winners are Bright, Pearl Harbor, Mommy Dearest, Mr. Mom / Eat, Pray, Love, Superman 3, but I think that's an outlier, North, Hobo with a Shotgun, The Cat in the Hat / Braveheart, Excalibur, and Dark Tide. I think Young Frankenstein's actually a good film, so I don't think
it
needs to go in.
It's certainly not as bad as at least The Haunting. I mean, at least Goodfellas had some pluses to it. The Haunting is objectively awful. So I think I've probably got to go with The Haunting.
I'm right there with you, brother.
There we go.
The Tomlinson for worst movie covered is The Haunting.
Hooray, hurrah.
What dreck.
Thank you, Eleanor. Thank you.
That's Eleanor. We move on to best feedback. And we do have 5 full entries. We have 3 for Christian's feedback on Roald Dahl.
Ah, okay.
And then Christian himself has nominated Bjorg's feedback last episode for De Niro, which obviously featured Jim Bowen. And
indeed.
Then Anne-Marie has nominated her husband for his treatise on Gene Wilder. So clearly there was some feedback on Young Frankenstein, but I'd be damned if I can remember what it is, which might spoil the fact that I'm not going with that for my... What are you thinking, brother?
I just found this really difficult, because we love getting any feedback.
That is true.
Especially when it's mostly all really well thought through, which makes me feel guilty when I've submitted feedback to anything, and it's usually kind of, yeah, it's great, whatever, cheers, bye.
Smells like gorgeousness.
Or I'm drunk.
Yes.
So I don't know. I did enjoy I'm going to go Ernest. I'm going to go the supporting of the love of Gene Wilder from star of Channel 5's Difficult Dogs, Peter Organ.
You see, I'm also going for Peter, but just because he invoked Jim Bowen on our podcast. So,
I mean, there is that as well.
So there we go. That does mean that the Tomlinson Award for Best Feedback goes to Christian on RA for talking about Roald Dahl.
I mean, we love Christian too, obviously.
Yes.
And we love all our listeners. That goes for you too.
Yes. Okay then. So, we move on to my least favourite award, favourite jingle.
Ah.
Now, two to choose from this year. And I know for a fact, I know for damn sure which one I want to win. We have either the feedback jingle, which employed harmonica and multi-layered voices, aka the harmonica slash feedback jingle.
Yeah.
And we also have, what does Roger Ebert think?
You've talked about Roger Ebert a lot this year.
I didn't want a bloody jingle for it.
Well, I had to highlight your overt love for him.
Well, you characterise it as a kink. I have a kink for long-dead film reviewers with their jaw removed.
I mean, tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Okay, fair enough. So what's the state of play with votes at the moment?
Harmonica feedback jingle has 3. What does Roger Ebert think has 2?
Okay. I mean, the musicality of the feedback jingle's cool. Always fun to remind myself that I can play different instruments. most recently, I've been playing the ukulele on really boring meetings.
Oh, right.
And maybe I can treat you to something in a minute.
Oh, lovely.
But yeah, I'll probably go with the feedback jingle.
Good, because that's what I'm going with as well. So,
hooray!
There we are, the harmonica feedback jingle. Wins favourite jingle, Tomlinson, 2020.
Nice.
Finally!
Even though Roger Ebert is your sugar pie honey bun, you know that you love him.
Love him.
He can't help himself. He loves Ebert and nobody else.
Your kid's still playing that kazoos.
One's broken.
Yeah, well, I know Link broke his after 3 hours. But,
yeah, he loved it that much.
Yeah.
Hey, all I want to do is see you turn into a giant woman, a giant woman. That makes no sense out of context. So.
No.
Anyway. Final award.
Final award. We're nearly there. Most anticipated subject for next year.
Write in vote.
We're doing John C. Reilly, belatedly, is because he won this award last year.
Mm-hmm.
So basically anyone can write in and nominate any actor. And the one that gets the most votes will see them become a featured subject.
Steven Seagal, Mel Gibson, Dean Cain.
Yes, there has to be a majority.
Fair enough.
I mean, that's the only thing that's keeping Dean Cain off. Do you know he fought with Dawson's dance?
Did he really?
Oh, dear. Oh, I love this. Anyway, so...
at this point, if you're a new listener, there's no point you being here.
Anyway.
Not without listening back to everything to get some kind of... Anyway.
We had a running joke once, which involved Stavros. Anyway, so the that's right. That originally came from Flick Chart Forum.
Did it really?
We were recording with Stavros, so it must have been.
Fair enough.
Anyway, we have 5 individual nominations, which is exciting.
Ooh. Oh, God, so we're kingmakers on this one.
We are, to an extent. So. This may not come as a surprise, particularly because this was his nomination last year. Org has gone for Sir Patrick Stewart.
Oh, yeah.
I wonder why.
Make it so, he said to himself as he pressed send.
And then we've got a vote from Sidney Poitier. Guess who chose that one?
Is it Donovan?
No, you racist, it's Christian. How dare you just assume it was Donovan? He sets him up.
I'm sorry. I'm racist.
Yeah, Donovan went for Michael B. Jordan.
Okay. Interesting.
Yes. Mike chose a bit left field, slightly. Maybe. We'll see what you think. Kieran Culkin.
Okay. We last saw him in Home Alone.
Did we?
Yeah, did we do Home Alone?
We've not done Home Alone. Oh. I think you're thinking of the wrong Culkin.
Yeah, I know, but he was in there as well.
Oh, was he? Okay.
Yeah, it was a younger brother who peed himself.
I barely watched those things.
Yeah, and R.I.P. Catherine O'Hara.
Oh, indeed. And then, finally, Anne-Marie has nominated the upcoming Helen of Troy, much to the dismay of Twitter, Lupita Nyong'o.
Hooray.
I have no idea if I
could. Well done.
Did I do that fairly well?
I mean, it might be a Chiwetel. Oh, I can't remember.
Oh, there we go.
Ejiofor. Yeah, situation where I try and claim the moral high ground and get it objectively wrong.
So, do any of those choices pique your interest, or are you going to play around a bit?
I mean, there's kind of no point me coming up with anyone particularly new just because. You know,
you say that.
We come up with stuff anybody. Anyway, sorry.
I mean, it's happened, but in a way that is actually, in retrospect, that is actually diminishing the point of the award.
Yeah, quite. So we need to endorse somebody's good idea,
yes,
basically. Now, I think the latter two are still kind of fairly early in their careers, even though they do have a brilliant body
definitely
of work
Jordan.
Behind them already.
Definitely,
yeah. Yeah. So I'm more inclined to look at the kind of broader output of Sir Patrick Stewart.
Sir Patrick, you see, I'm there. It's to me, it's either Stewart or Poitier for me.
Yeah.
But just so that Org doesn't keep giving us the same choice year on year. Your wish is our command, Org. This year, 2026, hopefully, will be the year that we do an episode on Patrick Stewart.
Hoop-de-boop-de.
Hoop-de-boop-de.
Yeah.
As Gandhi once said.
Yeah, of course he did. And let's see if he does anything else than Jean-Luc Picard and Professor Charles Xavier.
I'm actually on a kind of X-Men rewatch at the moment. So,
oh, are you now?
Yes. So, okay.
I've just finished rewatching Lord of the Rings. So we're both scratching an Ian McKellen itch.
Obviously. Well, an itch that's ever-present.
Indeed.
Excellent. Well, that's been the Tomlinson Awards. Thank you very much for those of you who participated. If you didn't, we get it. It's our fault. It really is. We'll try and do better. Cool. Okay. Well, with that, we will move in to the other film of our featured subject, the 2024 winner of the previous Tomlinson Award, Mr. John C. Reilly. And we're covering his collaboration with that there Will Ferrell with Step Brothers.
When Robert and Nancy became man and wife, their children became Step Brothers.
Hey.
Now,
Brennan, you and Dale are going to have to share a room. Just until the two of you get jobs and you move out.
They're living side by side.
Are you awake?
Yeah.
I hate your guts.
I'm going to beat the shit out of you.
Working out their differences.
I think they're starting to like each other.
What are you doing?
I'm burying you.
I'm alive! I'm alive!
I'm waking the neighbors! Shut up!
And facing new challenges.
You have 1 month to find jobs or you're on your ass.
What? This house is a prison!
Well, Brennan, you certainly have had a lot of jobs.
Thank you. I'm a real self-starter.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Who is this gentleman sitting behind you?
Hello, Ms. Lady.
Unfortunately, there isn't another position available.
We're willing to have sex with you.
Please leave this office.
Do we get any sort of souvenir?
Get out of my office!
From Columbia Pictures.
Nancy and I are retiring.
We're putting the house on the market.
What about us?
They'll have to team up.
We're not going anywhere. I'm working on a plan.
To hang on to the things they care about most.
As you can see, you got a really awesome front lawn.
I'm getting a really good feeling about this.
I am so glad.
Welcome to the neighborhood!
The neighbor is a Nazi?
Howdy! Hey, I love the color of your skin.
We're done here.
Yeah.
Step Brothers.
We did it!
Woo-hoo-hoo!
This is how it's doing.
Brothers is a 2008 American comedy film which stars Will Ferrell and John C. Reilly from a screenplay from the director Adam McKay and Will Ferrell and produced by my favourite man in comedy, not Judd Apatow.
Ha 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 ha! So funny, man.
It follows the unlikely tale of stay-at-home men with their single parents. The 39-year-old Brennan, as played by Will Ferrell, and the 40-year-old Dale, as played by C. Reilly. And their parents actually have a hookup. A whirlwind romance and get married, therefore making them stepbrothers. So, upon moving in together, they initially take a dislike to each other until they realise that the real villain is Adam Scott, who is the
as always
the blood brother of Brennan, and they basically try and make sense of the changing landscape around them as they really should be looking to move out and get jobs, really. But they are man children, so it's difficult.
Like Sabrina Carpenter's song. That's right, it's a recent reference here on Hey An Actor.
Lovely stuff, who's she? I'm kidding, I'm kidding. I've heard of Sabrina Carpenter. She's an excellent teenage witch. So this was Project Ha for me, brother. What about yourself?
Likewise, actually.
Righto.
Had never seen it. It was, again, one of those films that was talked about or memed or lots of things came out of it that everyone, oh yeah, that bit in Step Brothers went, ha ha ha, is this a house or a prison? Ha ha ha, did we just become best friends? Ha 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 ha, they're old men fighting, ha 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 ha. So it's something that I was aware of and I knew was held in high regards. Had not seen it until I watched it around Christmas time.
I'm with you. I mean, apart from the best friends line, I haven't heard quite as much buzz about this film. I know it is the film people point to when they look at the kind of double act between Ferrell and John C. Reilly, because ultimately they have collaborated together a lot. But I think this is like the first time where they've done so as a vehicle for the two of them as comedy frontmen.
Not quite true, because Talladega Nights, the Ballad of Ricky Bobby, was 2 years prior to this film, which was first and foremost a Will Ferrell film, but John C. Reilly played the kind of best friend character,
who
was a main part of the story.
Sure, I think that's what I mean. I think of Talladega Nights, which is a film I've only seen bits of. I've not seen it in full. I see that more as of a Will Ferrell film. Whereas I see Step Brothers as very much shared between the two of them. But I do, I very much see your point. I do understand that John C. Reilly was a major supporting player in that film. But, I mean, I suppose on that bent, because Will Ferrell is not someone we've really come across over the course of the podcast's history.
Massively.
I know that I remember recording something with Mike years ago, because it must have been years ago, and just like teasing him with regards to the fact that they really didn't want us to do a Will Ferrell month. And I'm like, well, so far so good, obviously, but this is around the time that he was at the height of his powers, because I think he'd broken through with Elf in 2003, then Anchorman the following year. Talladega Nights was 2006. This is 2008. So if we say that the noughties was kind of the decade where he really broke out as a comedy star, this is the kind of him at his pomp. And let's, you know, do things slightly out of order. This was a successful film, certainly financially, not perhaps as much critically, but as you say, it's kind of ingratiated itself with the zeitgeist at the time. So there is a pop culture impact, albeit not nearly as much as Anchorman. So it's interesting looking at their dynamic, because it's a dynamic that has lasted. They had their own take on Sherlock Holmes and John Watson within the last 5 years, certainly. Not a film I've watched, but...
Nope, why would you?
Well, no, because it looked bad. But clearly they're a duo who feel comfortable working with one another.
Yeah.
And, you know, have been in this and that together. So what did you think about it as a kind of equal pairing? Do you see it more of a Will Ferrell film, or do you think it was pretty equal?
I think it was the thumb was on the Will Ferrell scale marginally, just by virtue of there being his brother and family involved as well.
Sure.
But only slightly. You could say similar of the John C. Reilly character. I forget which one's which, to be honest.
He's Dale.
He's Dale, okay. Yeah. So he kind of ends up in having a secret affair with the sister-in-law of Will Ferrell's character. So he kind of has his sort of way in there.
Catherine Hahn.
Catherine Hahn, indeed. Yeah. That's fun to look back and go, oh yeah, look, she's doing that. So I think generally slightly more Will Ferrell. I think Will Ferrell definitely the bigger name, especially in comedy at this point, despite C. Reilly's other star turns or high-profile roles or high-profile films, rather. I think in terms of keeping it reasonably equal and even, this kind of ticks that box.
I'd agree. I think it's probably just because Ferrell having co-written the film, and then also Brennan is the character who has the backstory. So there's a bit more to explore with regards to that. Whereas Dale is more of a character who we see living in the present, as you say, with the affair with Adam Scott's wife. And I mean, that's not really played out that much. Perhaps if it was a longer film, it might have had a bit more bearing on the story.
Maybe.
As it is, it does seem a bit more of a distraction, really. But, I think it's relatively even. I don't think it's a case, certainly, of Will Ferrell hogging all the best lines for himself. And you see that the two are very similar characters. Now, what could be off-putting is that the characters are basically man-children, isn't a trope that Ferrell shies away from, shall we say.
No.
Now, to what
extent... In fact, it's one of a long list of amazing films involving Will Ferrell being slightly babyish and then written or directed or produced by Adam McKay and Judd Apatow. They've got a kind of rhythm by this point.
They do. Actually, I will say, even though if I sniggered at Ferrell's character being referred to as 39, he wasn't actually that far off that age at the time.
I did the maths while you were talking. Will Ferrell was 41 at the time of release, and John C. Reilly was 43.
Well, there we go.
So, you know, you laugh, but...
Come the end of the year, I will be the same age of Will Ferrell in this film.
Indeed. How does that make you feel?
I think I look pretty darn good by comparison. I'm surprised, given the amount of alcohol I've drunk over the years. But my non-withered skin remains surprising. But there we are.
My supple breast.
I was going to tell you about the surgery, but...
Anyone hear me complaining about the breast? You're like 10 years younger. Plus, I did your breast. Anyway, carry on. I mean, we've kind of danced around a little bit.
Sure.
What did you think about this film? Because I honestly didn't find it massively funny. And I don't know whether it's because I watched it on my own, and we talked about this briefly when we talked about the Dewey Cox story,
sure,
about comedy films being funny with other people. In isolation, it was kind of a, oh yeah, yeah, interesting, rather than kind of belly laughs and ah ha 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 ha. What did you think of it?
I struggled to get into this film, and it was very much the man-child aspect of it.
Yeah.
Now,
it's only so far you can kind of take that before it becomes a bit insufferable.
Absolutely. It's a Judd Apatow film. hey, is that Seth Rogen?
As was Walk Hard.
True. But Walk Hard was doing something very specific.
I guess so, yeah.
Whereas this one, I got into it as the two of them actually kind of grew to like each other. And then the introduction of Adam Scott into the film, I think basically saved it, really. Because, notwithstanding that I've got a lot of time for Adam Scott as an actor, thinking back to Evangeline Lilly Month and the Little Evil film that we covered.
Oh, yeah.
Evangeline Lilly's been in the news recently, hasn't she?
Has she?
Retired, and then she suffered brain damage.
Oh, yes. Mm. Yeah, I forgot about that.
Yeah, so did she.
Come on.
Too soon?
Oh, my God.
Clearly. Okay. But the fact that it is one thing to... If I could compare this to one of my favourite childhood books, brother.
Go on.
You know how The Twits by Roald Dahl...
Yes.
Starts as a series of skits between Mr. and Mrs. Twit. And then halfway through, Dahl's just like, oh, for fuck's sake, let's just get on with the narrative.
We must get on with the story.
Now let's introduce some monkeys. what a fucking excellent book that was. Anyway.
Oh, enough silliness. On with the monkeys! Enough with the silliness. Here's Adam Scott being a dick.
The point is, if it had just been, if it had just been Will Ferrell rubbing his balls on a drum set for like half an hour, just be like, no, we're going to have to do something else. So really, Adam Scott's brother character is the catalyst to get everything kind of moving. And it's still fairly unclear as to what's really the story. It's just like they're so irritating that they inadvertently split up the marriage of their parents. all because one guy cares more about a boat than he does actual people. To that extent, the parents, we had Richard Jenkins, who is Dale's biological dad, who I can't say I really know much about or have really seen him in much. He's in the Let the Right One In American remake, Let Me In, and he is in The Cabin in the Woods, which I've seen, but don't rate quite as highly as most people do. But did you come across him before?
Not really. I don't remember seeing him in anything, put it that way.
Sure. And then the biological mother of Brennan is played by Mary Steenburgen.
I'm sure I'd seen her in something before.
Probably Back to the Future 3.
That's right.
She plays Clara.
She was also in Nixon from 1995. Nixon's mother.
She was, yes. I did mention there's a cameo from Seth Rogen, because of course there is.
Of course there is.
Other cameos include Phil Lamar, who...
Samurai Jack and Hermes.
Green Lantern.
From Futurama.
Static Shock.
Yeah.
And the guy who gets his head blown off in Pulp Fiction.
I'd forgotten about that.
Yes. So he's in it. And so is Rob Riggle as one of Adam Scott's toadies.
Yep.
And you also have Ken Jeong in there as well.
What was he? Employment agent.
Yes.
Yes, of course.
Indeed. Yes, of course.
Of course. It's Ken Jeong in his early career.
Yes, because by this point, I think this is
the same. Hangover.
No, I think this is the same year as The Hangover. I think that was 2008.
It says Hangover started in 2009.
Okay, so just before.
So it's just about to do that, and then Community also was in that year as well. So
wow, here we are.
He was in Knocked Up, which I've not seen.
Oh right, yeah.
Which is meant to have not been very well.
Or
have a brilliant legacy.
Knocked Up. Well received, but I saw it in the cinema with my girlfriend at the time. And that was...
Oh, what fun.
It was awkward as hell.
Cool. Written and directed by Judd Apatow.
Mm-hmm. It also features Paul Rudd. Paul Rudd.
I mean, it's like, it's kind of an ensemble cast of comedic actors doing silly things to further enhance the tomfoolery of the two stars. So you kind of know what to expect going into it, especially if it's been out for multiple years.
Yes.
Try 16. But,
more than that. Is it? 18 this year.
18. I can't maths. Mm. I looked very briefly at the similarities between a lot of the people in the film and who made the film. And this is the officially the fourth collaboration between Adam McKay and Will Ferrell.
Uh-huh.
And the second one involving John C. Reilly on top of it as well. And having Judd Apatow involved as well. But I think where it falls flat for me a little bit is they're kind of, it seemed a bit lazy to me. As in, like, you know what this film's going to be like. It's got Will Ferrell being silly. he's an older looking man and he's being a toddler. Here we go again, folks.
Please kill
the
me.
The joke really fell thin. it really fell thin fairly early on, and you're right, the best part of the film is towards the end when they actually do grow a story and when things do develop and you see actual acting from these people rather than just acting stupid. Because it's absurdist, of course it is, because it's this kind of film. But there's only so far you can stretch the absurdity out before you go, what? How would this be allowed to happen? You can't have this all the way through without something giving. And then, oh, look, something's given. What is it that's given? Well, the dad's really cross about his boat. And this is finally the straw that's broken the camel's back, according to him. And therefore heartbreak and therefore plot. And, you know, once there is actually a plot involved, it's kind of cool. It's a nice ending to the film. It's all about family and looking out for each other and being supportive of each other. I'm a bit disappointed by the actual proper ending, which is very much kind of, yep, we're still a bit silly.
Yes.
And there's even, what I really appreciated with the film was the therapist character.
Okay.
Who all the way through is saying, This is really bad, you know. No, boundary, need a boundary.
Yeah.
And, you know, they laugh her off. Ha, 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 ha. She's the Frank Grimes of this film.
Again, if it didn't get some kind of structure, then the film would really, really test my patience. But I don't think it's as good as Walk Hard, put it that way.
No.
Because
no, I agree.
That was, you know, physically attempting to try something, whereas this does, as you say, feel a lot more free form, because Anchorman, famously, there was a lot of improvisation in that film. So I think the idea was, you know, let's try and do that, but with a more kind of streamlined kind of double act, say.
Yeah.
Like, the fact that they're both, somnambulists. Sleepwalkers.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Is the fact that, you know, that right there is a license just to do stupid things and potentially crack up the actors playing the parents. Whether or not it does or not. Well, obviously, what ends up in the finished film doesn't, but who knows what was on the cutting room floor.
So, I'm sure they had a lot of fun making it.
Yes. But,
I kind of begrudge films that are a bit like that. Which they're like, I really like improv comedy, and I like when things are left open to improv, but when it feels self-indulgent, I start to kind of, in some situations, I start to feel like, come on, guys, we're paying money for this. Yeah. Like, you're just dicking around.
That is a lot of the problems I have with Judd Apatow films.
Yeah.
Just, it's the same people. In fairness, I'll stretch that out. It's the problem I've got with Adam Sandler films. You know?
Yeah.
Why is Rob Schneider in a film in the 2020s exactly? It's not because of any talent.
No.
Yeah.
He's certainly not in a marriage anymore. Hi-yo!
All the cultural references.
Yeah. I know, right? Thank goodness we delayed recording.
Yes.
But, like, you're right. They'll argue that, like, you know, these are funny people. Let's allow them to be funny. And, yeah, that's absolutely fine. But that kind of humour is so much better when it's inclusive and you're there and you kind of see it kind of in its, like, in its rawity. Like, if you're at some sort of improv show or...
You were telling me off mic... how you were looking at one of my stand-up clips and saying, yeah, well, that's not very refined, is it? You could have been doing this, and that. Because you could tell that I hadn't written anything and was just, like, going with crowd reaction. And I much prefer to have things... I think what I'm trying to say is comedy is a lot better if it's polished and rehearsed. And, you know, you work on bits that do work and not so much things that don't work. If it is pure improv, like, say, Whose Line Is It Anyway, that's a completely different matter. Yeah. But, you know, just dicking about and seeing what works is potentially a very indulgent waste of money.
Yeah. I definitely felt that.
This film was made for $65 million.
What?
For what is not a hugely starry cast. I mean, yes, there's lots of comedy actors, as you've mentioned, but it's not like there's a ton of locations or
Okay, in terms of locations, I suppose they do go around lots of different places. They do film on a boat, but... Wow. I mean, by contrast, I've just looked up how much it costs to make Walk Hard, which I would argue goes to loads of different places. That was made for $35 million.
Yeah.
And had loads and loads of different cast members.
And lost money.
Still, but they made it. I don't get it.
No, I mean,
unless the star salaries were really, really high.
Wow. There you go.
Wow. I mean, it near doubled its money when at the box office when it came back.
So it worked then, but...
Yeah, but Jesus Christ. Peas and rice! Okay, fine. I mean, it's not a bad film. Don't get me wrong. It's not an unfunny film. It's just, it was, for me, a bit underwhelming and kind of lazily done.
Yeah, I'll row back. I don't think this is necessarily lazy. I do think it's indulgent, certainly.
Okay.
But I think there's enough there to mean it wasn't, you know, it wasn't something that annoyed me actively or got me angry. Would I watch it again? Perhaps. But that's not...
I would watch it on my own again.
Yeah, I think I'm with you. I think I'd have to see it with other people to want to see it again. Like, if there was someone who's, like, really into it, and maybe you just need a second time watching it. And I'm like that with certain films, certainly not so much comedies, but...
Because
usually for comedies, it's like you've got one chance to really surprise people with jokes coming out of thin air. But...
What we've not talked about, just before we finish, is John C. Reilly in his performance as Dale.
Sure. I mean, it's interesting that there has to be something of a mirroring with Ferrell, but at the same time can't be too much like him, because that would negate the point of them coming together. It's like, if I had no defining qualities to work off of, it's like it wouldn't work. I mean, you can't exactly say that they're chalk and cheese or anything like that. It's not a case of it's the odd couple. It's more the case of they are very similar people, but just with a few things here and there, and they're starting out with a mutual suspicion, mistrust of one another. I suppose Brennan, because he's got a bad relationship with his blood brother, and then Dale, because he's an only child. So, you know, there's so if you read into it that way, I don't think the film outright states it. Whether or not it needs to is a different matter. But the fact that there is a kind of job to be done to work at, because it could just be them playing pranks on each other for ages. And it wasn't that so much. So I can appreciate the certain restraint with regard to that angle. So I don't actually mind the fact that they kind of joined forces relatively quickly. At the same time, they needed to have like some tension. As for the performance specifically, again, if you can get over it being the archetype of a man-child, which is both rare and... I mean, it's common online, but I'd struggle to find someone who is 40 years old and acting in this way in real life, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
I mean, in part because you probably wouldn't be exposed to them because they'd be living at home and doing bugger all, but at the same time, I don't know how believable it is. Then again, we have to say it's 18 years ago since this film was made. Yeah, so
that's nearly 16 years.
a little over 16, certainly. Maths.
Oh, hazelnuts. Ooh, cadbury's make them and they cover them in chocolate.
What about yourself? Yeah. What did you think of
that? He's very similar to Will Ferrell, which is kind of what he needs to be in this film. There's not a huge amount between them, but there is a difference between them, but there's just enough to make him in his own like rounded character.
Sure.
I suppose within the context of what he had to do in the film, yeah, he does that fine. It's just it's a bit one note. But you know, that's all it really needs to be. We've certainly seen him be more well-rounded.
Yes.
In various other roles, but then I guess all he needed to be in this film was a silly comic foil for the funny men.
Oh yeah, I mean, again, for this episode specifically, we're covering two of his comedy roles, but earlier in the year, we saw him in Chicago, for which he got his Oscar nomination. And there are plenty of other films in which he's had serious roles, and we'll get into them later in the episode. But for this, it is just a case of he is Will Ferrell's foil, and he steps up and does it very well.
Indeedy doodles. Well done, him.
Good stuff. Cool. Okay. Well, we'll stick in a clip from Step Brothers, and once we come back, we've got more goodness for you.
Doop-dee-doop-dee.
Let's play a game. All right. Mm. On the count of three, name your favorite dinosaur. Don't even think about it. Just name it. Ready? One, two, three. Velociraptor.
Favorite non-pornographic magazine to masturbate to.
Good Housekeeping.
If you were a chick, who's the one guy you would sleep with?
John Stamos. What?
Did we just become best friends?
Yup.
You want to go do karate in the garage?
Yup.
Brother, let's talk about the multifaceted career of John C. Reilly. A comedic actor primarily known for his comedy roles, but he has not always been a comedy actor. In fact, he has done serious roles that we've covered. He's also quite a musical man, and we'll talk more about that a little bit later on. And obviously we talked about that a little bit as part of Dewey Cox, or The Walk Hard Story, or vice versa. When were you first aware of John C. Reilly as his own guy?
That's a very good question.
Because I think, for me, it would have been Ricky Bobby, the Talladega Nights film, where like he was there and he was doing stuff. And then just kind of noticed that he was there for other things as well. Yeah. Most notably, the sketch at the Oscars with Will Ferrell and Jack Black performing a song. Are you aware of this?
I am aware of this song, yes. I was going to bring it up.
Fellas! Jack Black! John C. Reilly!
This madness must stop. There is no need to fear. You can have your cake and eat it too. Just look at my career. I didn't cry in the blues. I didn't pick silly fights. I chose to be in both Boogie and Talladega Nights.
So when did you first know about him?
I would say he was certainly on my radar around the time of Chicago.
Okay.
Perhaps he stood out just because he was one of the few sympathetic characters within. I have a feeling, though, like you, it wasn't until he really started like working in the kind of realm of comedy that his star got pushed to the forefront. Now, that's not to say that's when he properly became a proper actor, because, as we say, Oscar nominated for his part in Chicago. We also covered The Hours previously.
Yes.
Which,
yes.
You know, not a happy film, therefore a drama. And he'd been in T. Anderson films, so we've covered Boogie Nights in the past as well.
Indeed.
Paul Thomas Anderson, and also they reteamed again in Magnolia, which isn't not a film I've seen, but again, its
me
reputation
either.
Precedes it, and
lovely,
you know, quite a few credits in the course of the '90s. But before we go into them, I would say it's probably the association with Will Ferrell that really kind of marked it out more in a kind of broad mainstream kind of way, I'd probably say.
Yeah, I think so. And the Wikipedia way of grouping together his film career means he kind of made the full-on transition in 2004. So before that, we've got all sorts of different roles that are more kind of worthy and so on. And then do you think, so here's the big question about John C. Reilly, do you think he, not sold out is the wrong term, but was there kind of part of him that maybe gave up by becoming a comedic actor, do you think?
I mean, perhaps if he only did comedies afterwards, although having a fair flick through his Wikipedia, I'm like, maybe I should stop that sentence right there. But
I mean, but I think so. I'm being a little bit kind of provocative, but like he's not stopped acting in these films. There's always kind of an emotional core to all of the comedy characters that he plays, and even when he's kind of branched out and been possibly, I would argue, I'm sure there'd be some sort of evidence to back this up, maybe, that maybe the role that's got him the most box office draw will be is as the main voice of Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, right.
The kind of arcade villain.
Yes.
Pastiche. Where he's still, I mean, you've probably not watched
I haven't,
films,
no.
I'm assuming.
No.
I've only watched the first one, and it's a pretty well done film in terms of, like, making up a universe of characters mixed with real characters with kind of licensed IPs. So you've got, like, the villain support group where he sat there with M. Bison and Bowser talking about how hard it is to be a villain in his video game.
Yeah.
So yeah, he does a good job at straddling serious acting with emotional heart.
Yeah, I think that's fair. It's something that we've seen in a variety of films. I mean, for example, he's in Guardians of the Galaxy.
Yeah, just like, with Peter Serafinowicz.
I know, it's like, what the hell are these guys doing here? aren't we trying to establish the protagonists as much as possible? But no, let's just chuck in a few very notable character actors.
Hey, Glenn Close, what are you doing here?
There's no Dalmatian to be had in this film. Which, of course, is all Glenn Close is known for.
Yes, that's it.
But, no, in seriousness, it's interesting the fact that he did become a lot more mainstream once he got into doing comedy. Now, which is not to say that he was in no-name indie films over the course of the 90s. I mean, his career technically started at the end of the 80s, but he was in Steven Seagal's film debut in 1988's Above the Law, in which he played
Thug in Bar, which
is right up there with Man in Market and Steaming Audience Member. But in the 90s, he was in the Tom Cruise, Nicole Kidman film Days of Thunder.
Uh-huh.
And then he was in the prominent 1992 Danny DeVito directed film Hoffa, which was about the union leader Jimmy Hoffa. You've heard of What's Eating Gilbert Grape, of course.
I have indeed, with problematic actor Johnny Depp.
That's the one. And Leonardo DiCaprio as well.
Ah, no problematicness with him. Oh, God, is it...
Sorry, is it? Okay. Well, anyway, let's not pursue that thought any further. As we said, moving through the 90s, Boogie Nights we've covered. That was Julianne Moore month. He was in The Love of the Game, which wasn't a horror film exactly, but it was a weird Sam Raimi baseball drama. So we covered it for the Flick Chart Forum, in which, would you believe it, John C. Reilly plays the best friend in support of the main star, who in this case was Kevin Costner.
Oh, good old Kev.
Yeah, sure. And then,
I think,
I'd be interested to do a Kevin Costner episode. Let's just say that.
Yeah, he was in something quite. No, he was in. Oh, what's that thing that's meant to be really good? White House or White Snake or White Park?
White Lotus.
No, I mean, it's not okay. White. I don't know. Something with cowboys. It's meant to be very good.
Yellowstone.
Oh yeah, that's
white,
the thing.
White, yellow.
They're similar colours when you really look at them.
Moving on. then we
don't make more of that than there's meant to
he
be.
He had a very productive 2002. He was in the acclaimed Jennifer Aniston serious film The Good Girl.
Okay.
Then he was also in Gangs of New York, which was another Marty Scorsese film.
God damn you, Marty.
Chicago, we've obviously covered earlier this year. And The Hours, which I can't remember if that was Julianne Moore or Meryl Streep or Nicole. We've done all three of them. It was.
Yeah.
I don't think it was Streep.
I think it was...
It was probably Kidman, I think.
I think it's Julianne Moore, possibly.
Okay, well, either way, It's been covered.
We'll find out.
In a less than memorable episode.
It was a long time ago and we're both different people.
And speaking of films we've also previously done in the past, The Aviator, another Scorsese film from 2004, which was Cate Blanchett month as she was playing Katharine Hepburn, of course.
There I was, storing urine in jars. Or watching someone else do it, Leonardo DiCaprio, who probably wasn't in the Epstein file.
Yeah, and then before Talladega Nights, which was 2006, she was also in the kind of J-horror remake of Dark Water, starring previously featured subject Jennifer Connelly.
Good Lord.
But we didn't cover that one. Probably because it's a horror film.
Why would we? Horror.
So 2006.
Jeff Davis is.
Talladega Nights. And then also, he had an uncredited role in Tenacious D's Pick of Destiny movie.
Was he Sasquatch?
He was Sasquatch, yes.
Oh, cool. I've still not seen that film.
Okay.
I was actively told not to watch it.
By me?
By you, and I think at least one other.
Yeah, it's disappointing. But yeah. I'm still surprised you haven't, what with the completionist aspect to it. But never mind. So then Walk Hard followed the year after that. Step Brothers followed the year after that. Uh-huh. And then we go into some very interesting films. Do you want to take over?
I'd love to.
Do any of them stand out to you?
I mean, he returns to... So Tim and Eric's Billion Dollar Movie, he was in. I don't know much about Tim and Eric, but I know that's one of his kind of early steps into silly comedy, using the Tim and Eric brand, I don't know. Is where he kind of had
the actual show, you mean?
I guess so.
Yeah.
I don't know who they are.
Started in 2007.
Okay. Maybe a bit earlier than
that. So their show was called Tim and Eric Awesome Show, Great Job.
That's where he was, Dr. Steve Brule, doing kind of some silly kind of medical advice.
I've not seen a lot of Tim and Eric, but the clips I have seen have been quite funny.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very funny. But
and sorry, just to go back on the Tenacious D part, probably suspected he was the Sasquatch because he was the Sasquatch in the Tenacious D TV show.
Was he actually?
Yes.
No, he wasn't.
Well, would Wikipedia lie to me?
Now, I lent somebody my Tenacious D DVD in, like, late 2000s.
The Complete Works.
The Complete Works, and I don't know where it is, and I want to watch the episode back now. It's probably somewhere. I'll see if I can find it. Okay, cool, fine. Ah, drat. As we go through the 2010s, there's things like he had a cameo in The Dictator, Sacha Baron Cohen, hilarious romp, which I'm sure is fine and not aged badly at all. Then we've got
Ralph, it's very prescient.
Yes, well, that's kind of what I mean. He was in the Anchorman sequel. He was in Guardians of the Galaxy 2014. He was very busy in 2015. The one that sticks out with me is he had the English voice role of a Miyazaki dub, the film When Marnie Was There, which I don't think I have watched. I'm pretty sure I haven't watched, but I'm sure he was in some other things that you're going to say, oh, before we move on, we must look at this one. Go on.
The one that definitely sticks out to me is in 2011... a very highly regarded psychological drama starring Tilda Swinton called We Need to Talk About Kevin.
That's fair.
Which was a very prominent film about a mother who is struggling with a very problematic son. Mm. The problematic son, played by Ezra Miller... The Problematic Flash.
Oh, no. Oh, no. we need to talk about Ezra.
Yeah. No, we don't.
Jumping back to 2016, he was a voice role in the film Sing, which was a high-profile animated animal singing competition thing directed by Garth Not Garth Marenghi. He was the comedy character. Garth Jennings, there we go. Fine. And then the year after, he was on Kong Skull Island. Because, yeah, why not? I'm sure we've seen that, but I don't remember anything about it.
I have seen it, but I saw it on mute, so I've got no idea what... I've got no idea what context I saw it in.
Was it on in a bar?
Maybe. But yeah. I remember watching a good part of it, but having no idea what was being said.
Now, I think 2018 is a very interesting year because it's sort of like a cross-section of the kind of roles that he is able to do.
Right,
because
yes.
You've got what looks like a kind of worthy drama Western film called The Sister Brothers with Whackin' Bottom. You've also got him playing Oliver Hardy with that there Steve Coogan in a Stan and Ollie biopic film.
A Laurel you've and Hardy the... biopic film called Stan and Ollie.
Yes. Yeah. You've got Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Breaks the Internet.
And Return of Jafar.
The Return of Jafar, which has all the kind of Disney princesses kind of being all meta and like, oh, do you have daddy issues? Where is our mother? And then you've also got to kind of finish off the quadrilogy, Holmes and Watson, which we mentioned earlier. His yes. kind of take on the Sherlock Holmes franchise with that there Will Ferrell again.
Yes. What?
That's a really good indication of what he can do. That he's got worthy drama, he's got being a kind of silly man, you've got being an animated villain who's got a heart, and you've got silly Watson man. He can do anything! He's so flexible in what he can do!
Versatile,
thank you.
Don't just be clowns, because then you're just bored. Mix it up and Oscar.
He's right.
And then after that, he's been in some other films as well. So, yeah, he's such an interesting guy. He can basically do what he wants. And I really appreciate people who can do that. So they've got the funny roles. They've got the silly roles. They're not typecast. I mean, I guess that's not quite true. He's kind of typecast as a sort of silly man, but can be kind of silly with heart, silly emotional, silly flawed. There's a lot going on to that there, John C. Reilly.
And are you aware, now granted in fairness it's not a film, but uh-huh. one thing you have missed out, which probably would be on your radar,
uh-huh.
he was in a music video last year.
Now, I was going to come on to this because very earlier on you talked about he's not been in some kind of no-name role. No. He was in a no-name role. The album was called No Name, and he played the amazing Archbishop Harold Holmes in the music video of the song of the same name. Which is great. You must listen to that album. It's the best solo work he's done. That there, Jack White. And yeah, the album itself is great. The song itself is amazing. And he does great, this kind of... what would you call it? Like a preacher, salesman, scam artist?
I've no idea. I've never heard of the thing.
It's possibly a good song to end the episode out with if we hadn't done a musical film. But it's great.
Well, there we go.
Did you see the video?
No.
Why not?
Why? Because I only... found out it existed like 3 minutes ago when I read it on Wikipedia.
After we finish this episode, I'm going to insist you watch it.
You can insist all you like.
Dear friend, if you want to feel better, don't make the devil make you toss this letter. Anyway, it's music time again on Hey An Actor. All I want to do is see you turn into a giant woman, a giant woman. Anyway.
So... it's fair to say John C. Reilly has had a varied career, and he's not someone who I would have thought about doing an episode on had he not won the Tomlinson Award. But
that's fair.
I would say he has a career that very much backs up doing so. And yes, we've only covered two of his films, but we've also covered others of his films in other episodes. So
yeah.
if you've listened to the podcast for a long time, you'll have seen us talk about the breadth of his work. Maybe in passing. I don't know how often we mention him in the Boogie Nights review. It was a long time since we did that episode. But we'll see.
Yeah, he's been around.
He has indeed. He has indeed.
Good, Matt. So, yeah, we like John C. Reilly.
We sure do. And therefore, thank you for your contributions to cinema.
Where?
Yeah.
I'm in an odd mood now. well, good, right. So, shall we do something else?
I think that's an idea, yes.
Yeah. Let's go on to Christian's Christmas Casting Challenge.
Yeah, let's do that.
In February.
Well, sure.
Do you want to start or shall I start? Because our task, just to remind people, was to think about how we could cast Hey and Actor subjects in a autobiographical film about ourselves, yes?
That is correct, yes.
Mm. So, who wants to go first?
I think you want to go first.
Apparently I do. Right, so we covered four actors last year. I've not included John C. Reilly in this, just because I couldn't make him fit naturally. Because all my picks definitely fit naturally. But my idea is, because we're doing autobiography and we've done lots of biographical films, I'm going to have various different stages of my life represented by different people and different things along the way. I won't go into too many details because, you know, my life is mine, so fuck you. Sure. But I'll start specifically with the actors that we covered last year. So Gene Wilder, I mean, he kind of has to be me. But I'm going to have him be me towards the end of my life.
Oh, no.
Because...
There's
going to
be crossover.
There's going to be three different actors playing me.
Oh, okay.
If we kind of think about... I'm assuming this autobiographical film is going to come in quite a few years' time, by which point I'll look kind of like Gene Wilder.
Sure.
But to represent me as a young man, you know, handsome, rakish, ladies' man, it's got to be Brad Pitt. So he would be me from the ages of 0 to, let's say, 36. No.
What, Benjamin Button.
Sort of, yeah. Well, that's kind of what got me to choose him rather than Christian Bale.
Wow. That's some casting.
Just because, you know, he's done age regression stuff. He's played young person in various different things. So, you know, it would make sense. But who on earth would be the perfect fit for me right now?
Right.
Well, I think we all know this, the answer to this. And, you know, picture that actor in your mind straight away. Yes, you've got it. Tim Curry would be me right now. because, you know, I've got all the hallmarks of Tim Curry. Now, this is not Tim Curry as he is at the moment post-stroke, no. Obviously. Just as Gene Wilder couldn't play me in a few years' time because he's dead. We're playing around with time here. So Tim Curry would be me as I am right now, with my wife, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
Right.
Because, you know, there's certain connections between my wife and Catherine Zeta-Jones.
That's you out of the doghouse. Okay. Yep.
Affiliated with Wales. and,
sure.
You know, yeah. You know, say no more. So what about Jamie Foxx and Robert De Niro? Well, I had to think really hard about how I could fit people in.
Right.
I didn't want to be too tokenistic about this, but I've got Robert De Niro. And I think early in my life, you know, again, without getting too personal, I kind of struggled with religion. Is religion something that I am? Obviously, we've been to church. So I think Robert De Niro would be really good as the Reverend Michael Docker. just because he would be a really kind of stern presence, but with kind of a caring edge. I'm sure you'll agree.
It looked nothing like the guy, but go on.
Who cares? Oh, fine. We've got a problem with that. You've got a problem. So,
I'm sorry. You're already somehow Brad Pitt, Tim Curry, and Gene Wilder.
And Jamie Foxx as Mrs. Poyser, my year three teacher, who's a really kind of decent role into becoming a teacher. So, you know, I think it's a natural thing. Then I started playing around with, well, who else could play different roles? Obviously, we've got Julie Andrews as mum. You know, who could be a sort of stern Yorkshireman to be my father? Well, that'd be Ian McKellen. Because that'd be really cool.
Famously from Lancashire.
More or less. You've got our sister. I've obviously got to have her involved too. So I've gone with the charming Kate Winslet. Because, you know, amazing, headstrong, boisterous.
Sure.
Knows her own stuff. And her husband, Rutger Hauer. Because, you know...
Dutch.
Yeah. Yep. Who else is important to have in my life? Yeah, Adam. So Adam, I've gone a little bit off piece with this one. I've got Bernie Mac in the role of Adam Fisher. What's happening, Pandy? You know, he would turn up and say that. Hang on a minute, I've missed my brother. Silly, silly me. I'm so sorry. So who would be the kind of the long suffering mentor figure? I don't know. The punchline is Rick Moranis.
I see. Is that Rick Moranis playing off of Brad Pitt or off of Tim Curry?
All the way through.
All the way him, through. Right.
You know, you are him all the way through your life.
Sure.
Unless I can very quickly come up with someone else who you could be. No. So, yeah, that's me. I'm sure there are other people I could fit in, but, you know, that's the three different parts of my life. We've got the young Brad Pitt being kind of guided by Jamie Foxx and tested by Robert De Niro's Michael Docker.
Yeah.
Anyway, so, yeah, that's me. How about you, brother? How did you get on with your casting challenge?
Have you thought of a director that would helm this wackiness?
Miyazaki.
Miyazaki.
It so would be an animated.
It's animated.
Film. No.
No,
it would be his first live action director.
I see.
Now, I don't know. Tom Hooper, because it's going to be a musical.
Right.
We're all going to be dressed as cats.
Lovely.
And to that end, Dad's going to be amazing because his character's already had practice at this.
Well, there we go. Yeah.
Good. So over to you. Over to you.
Glad you've taken this seriously. He says, looking down at his notes.
Well, here we go then.
So, okay, so when I say there's going to be a similarity, then yes, right. For a biopic, I'm looking at an older me looking back at my life, or a specific period of my life.
Okay.
So again, old Ian is going to be Gene Wilder.
Okay.
Yep, still hanging on to the hair.
You get nothing!
Exactly. And the nurse, Catherine Zeta-Jones.
The nurse!
Because I am in a home, you see.
Oh, of course.
Ian
home?
Wow. Okay. Yeah, let's call it Ian home. The Bilbo Baggins estate.
An Ash from Alien walking around.
The nurse shows into my room a visitor, and it is old man Tom Hemmings.
Oh!
As played by Robert De Niro.
Oh, fuck off.
Oh, yes.
That's
as
believable as Jamie Foxx as Mrs. Poison. do go on.
Now, Robert De Niro is method. He could very much pull off that accent.
Funny enough.
So, myself and Stavros, as old men, reminisce about a particular event in our life. That's right, the time we went to C2E2.
Oh, God, it's an in-joke. Here we go.
Well, kind of. Now, I've...
Oh, can I preempt who Michael David Sims is going to be played by?
Oh, you can guess.
Viggo Mortensen.
No, you're wrong.
Okay.
So, we reminisce about the time how 2011 Ian, Donald Gleeson...
okay.
Meets up because... I know the suggestion has been made, but realistically, the only time in my life I did look a bit like Donald Gleeson would be in my 20s.
Sure.
Both the Indian era and the bit that came after.
Okay.
So 2011 Ian, Donald Gleeson, meets up at Heathrow Airport with his good friend Adam, as played by Jamie Foxx.
Okay.
you know, crazy, black, complicated. That's Adam Fisher and Jamie Foxx.
I mean, I still see him more as Mrs. Poyser. Do well, go on.
Sure. For those of you who aren't me or him, Mrs. Poyser was not black in any way. Anyway.
It was probably mid-60s. Go on.
Yes. So we have our wacky escapade of nearly missing our plane because our food order at Heathrow was late. And then we've got, obviously, me recording everything via the travelogue. And then once we get to Chicago, we meet up with young man Stavros, as played by Andrew Garfield.
Oh!
Yes. So the three of us meet up, and then we meet the Yanks. Now, I have streamlined it to but three members of the Earth 2 community. A, okay. Because I didn't have enough time to cast everyone who was there. And B, because you don't want to bloat out the cast. So I have gone with Mike, I've gone with Will Ackerman, and I've gone with Hannah Krieger.
Okay.
So for Hannah, I have gone with Beanie Feldstein, who is Jonah Hill's sister and has been in films such as Booksmart and Lady Bird and Bad Neighbours 2, Sorority Rising.
Okay.
Okay. And then, if you didn't know that person, strap in for Will. Now, Native American actors was a bit of a struggle.
Right.
So they're going to need de-aging slightly. But I have gone with Deputy Hawk from Twin Peaks, Michael Horse.
Of course.
Of course a horse. Eating some grass, of course, a horse. And finally, Michael David Sims. I think he'll appreciate this casting, although, again, it will need some slight de-aging. It's Stanley Tucci.
The Tooch!
The Tooch.
Nice.
Yes.
I'll have a go with that.
And shenanigans ensue. And then we cut back, and then I die. So,
you look back on your life and the life support machine slowly flatlines.
Who said I was on life support? Stavros kills me. So it's a twist.
I mean, I assumed it was how we would go.
Yes. So obviously, Christopher Nolan. So the film is 4 hours long.
Criticised by Elon Musk for being woke.
Yeah, well, there we go.
Yeah.
Good, well, hope that sufficed, Christian.
That you barely used any actors from our past.
I used 9 actors there. So I used the ones for the year.
We could have Dan Tolan played by Arnold Schwarzenegger. That could have been
fun. Dan Tolan wasn't there.
Well, you know, this, you're not on life support. With a nurse.
Well, that's the fictional aspect, obviously.
What about, I can't remember anybody else. Thank you for editing that bit out.
Thanks, Christian.
Thank you, Christian. Merry Christianmas.
Indeed. So, that's pretty much it for this episode. What we will be doing with the outtakes is we're going to kind of do what we normally do, with a standard episode, is that we will play some at the end. And because it's the year-end episode, we'll play more than just the one, and they can have come from anywhere, but the main thing is we're not dropping them in here or commenting on them, because, frankly, we've never got it right, and it's just going to extend the editing process some more. So that is where you will find our outtakes for
that is 100% honesty on Hey and Actor.
Quite so, quite so. But before we go, we've got our next slate of actors announce.
Yes, we do, don't we?
We do indeed. So, we are going to be starting off with a comedic actor to start the year proper. And that we have chosen is one Mr. Danny DeVito.
Hooray! Hey, assholes! Yeah.
So I'm going to be starting off that episode. So, brother, what film have you picked out for me?
Well, brother, for you, I've gone with a biopic. But unfortunately, Danny DeVito is not playing the person who is the biopic is of. But he is a high-profile character in it. We're talking about the Andy Kaufman biopic Man on the Moon, which has Danny DeVito play his manager. And also Taxi Driver is mentioned. Let's talk about how it happens that it is on the screen. Ooh. Anyway, so that's what I'm picking for you. Brother, who have you or what have you chosen for me?
We're going back to the 80s, brother.
Oh, no.
Back where it all began. Oh, come on. You had a very carefree 80s.
Yeah, I was 2 when it finished.
Exactly. Less than.
Yes.
But, you didn't lift a finger, basically.
I would have pointed. Anyway, carry on.
Anyway, so we are going back to after he'd finished his run on the sitcom Taxi, and he'd start branching out into comedy movies.
Mm.
So his third build on the adventure movie, Romancing the Stone.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
So, more on that in the next episode.
Hooray, hooray.
But with regards to that, we are going to be finishing off with a film both of us have seen, probably at the cinema.
Likely.
I seem to recall.
Likely.
I definitely did, whether you were there or not. I'd again say probably.
Probably.
Very probably.
Yes.
And it's going back to the aforementioned author, Roald Dahl.
Oh, no.
A.K.A. Let's throw some monkeys into the plot.
Noted anti-Semite.
That's the one. And it is the live-action big-screen adaptation of Matilda.
Good.
Ah, dear. Look out for more of that in the next episode.
Hey, we're starting 2026 off with a bang.
Indeed.
Yeah.
But after Danny DeVito will be another episode. Mm. And, brother, it'll be your turn to pick an actor, and this is one where we can finally get our audience back involved with helping us select the film.
Quite.
So without further ado, who have you picked out?
Well, high-profile films, she's been in a lot. We need your help picking films of Zoe Saldana.
Yes, Zoe Saldana, who recently made news because she is the most bankable Hollywood actor of all time.
Mm, take that's that, Johnny Vegas.
Yes, Johnny Vegas.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure where that name came from. But,
Our American listeners, Johnny Vegas is a northern comedian over here in England.
Yeah. Oh,
very famous for teabag adverts.
Quite.
With a knitted monkey.
Ho, ho, ho. Yeah,
that was 25 years ago.
Good Lord. I'm sure Mrs. Poyser was alive then. Anyway, so yeah, we need your input of what are the high-profile films that he has, or she, sorry, has been in. Oh, I'm very tired. So yeah, write in, please, or email, or post on the Earth 2 forums if you wish to email us. Our email address is hey@earth-2.net. hey@earth-2.net. Call us now.
Why am I so funky?
Why am I so funky?
Private joke. Okay, well, thank you very much, everyone, for listening to this. Again, we do apologise for the delay. We'll try and get more than 4 episodes out this year.
We will jolly well try. Let's just say
we've
already started watching next month's films. So, you know,
We have.
We are definitely trying our hardest.
Yeah.
But also, we're busy and this is free. So up yours.
Yeah.
Goodbye. So long, suckers.
Enjoy the outtakes. And goodbye.
Walk hard. here rove, walk bold, hard at my creed, my code. I've been scorned and slandered and ridiculed too. Had to struggle every day my whole life through. Seen my share of the worst that this world can give. But I still got a dream and a burning rage to live. Walk hard, hard. When they say you're all done, walk bold, hard. Though they say you're not the one. Even if you've been told time and time again that you're always gonna lose and never gonna win, gotta keep that vision in your mind's eye. When you're standing on top of a mountain high. You know, when I was a boy, folks used to say to me, slow down, Dewey. Don't walk so hard. And I used to tell them, life's a race, and I'm in it to win it. And I walk as damn hard as I please. How do I walk, boys? When I meet my maker on my dying day, gonna look him in the eye, by God I'll say, I gave my word and my word was good. I took it in the face and I walked as hard as I could. Walk hard, walk hard, walk hard, walk hard.
You know, kind of complex and complicated, and the children are now in the office. What do you guys think of Bonnie and Clyde?
The scene with all the kind of the big knobs talking about how hilarious. Hang on. One second. Oh, someone's at the door.
Who could it be? Who could it be? Who is coming to see Pandy? What do they want? Is it a package being delivered for him?
I think somebody opened the door to put the parcel. That's weird.
Ooh.
Something like that.
I've never heard of it, but it sounds interesting. And I don't know what it is, but it seems kind of weird.
I mean, you've hit the nail on the head there, you two. Thank you so much for your input. Can I have a cup of tea, please?
Yeah, I can make Daddy a cup of tea.
Of course we can.
Oh, thank you, Nick. Shut the door for me.
Wait, where's inherent comedy in Taxi Driving?
I don't know, it's got a funny haircut.
Tick follows tock follows tick follows tock.
Dum 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 dum. Oh, I'm really fancy a Guinness now.
That film is The King of Comedy.
Cock.
Sorry.
Continue.
What is your lunch for? So neat stirring.
Liver and bacon.
Yeah.
Yeah. with some apple and mustard.
I hate mustard.
That's why I hate Sebastian Coe.
That's right.
Yeah. The shining film with the most votes happens to be...
Heat. No, Goodfellas.
You're right, how do we do this?
Well, brother, it was Goodfellas.
Oh, yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah, that it was. For the best.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you, children.
See you later. Oh, we have no end of outro.